B'siyata Deshmaya, we're going to learn Shabbos Taf Kuf Yud Gimel. We're going to start six lines from the top of the Omud with the next Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Koishrin Dli, if there's a pail that's supposed to be tied onto a rope that's going down into a boir, into a pit, in order to draw water, then you're allowed to attach and tie this pail beposke with a girdle, which is a type of belt typically worn by people around their waists. And the reason is because even though you're tying it, but there's no chance you're going to leave it there permanently, and therefore the kesher, the knot you're going to make, is not considered a kesher shel kayoma, and therefore one's allowed to do it on Shabbos. Avoloi bechevel, but you're not allowed to use a typical rope to tie the pail, because a typical rope, you're going to be mevatel it there, you're going to leave it there permanently, and the knot you're going to make is a kesher shel kayoma. Rabbi Yehuda Matir, Rabbi Yehuda says that even with a rope, you're allowed to tie such a pail on Shabbos, and we'll have to see in the Gemara what the discussion is. Continues the Mishnah, Klal Omar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said that the rule is, Kol kesher she'enoi shel kayoma, any knot which is not made to be there and to stay there permanently, in chayov in olea, you're not chayov for making such a knot on Shabbos or for untying it on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Chevel demai. The Mishnah mentioned tying such a pail with a rope. Everybody says you're allowed to tie a pail with a girdle, with a poske. There's a machlekas tanoim in the Mishnah whether you're allowed to tie the pail with a rope. The Tanakhama say it's osa. Rabbi Yehuda says it's muta. Asks the Gemara, this chevel, this rope, what type of rope is it? What are we talking about? Ilema chevel de alma, if you're talking about a regular rope, Rabbi Yehuda matir keshe shel kayomahu. How can Rabbi Yehuda say it's mutar if we assume that this knot is going to be there permanently? It's a keshe shel kayomah, and Rabbi Yehuda agrees that making a keshe shel kayomah on Shabbos is chayev. Elo, says the Gemara, it must be it's chevel de gardi. It's not a typical rope. It's a rope that the weavers would use, and it's a rope that they needed with them for their weaving, and therefore, even though they would temporarily tie a pail with it, but in no way will they leave it there, and they'll immediately untie it, and therefore it's not a kesher shel kayoma. The question is, if so, why do the Chachomim say, why does the Tanakhama say that it's osar? Says the Gemara, lememra, are you suggesting, derabonon sovri gozrinon chevel de gardi otu chevel de alma? Are you suggesting that the machlekes is that the Chachomim say that in order that a person shouldn't chas v'shalom use a regular rope, therefore we don't even allow him to use a weaver's rope? Rabbi Yehuda sovar legos rinon. Rabbi Yehuda says we do not need to make such a precaution, and since the weaver's rope is not going to be a kesher shel kayoma, one's allowed to make it on Shabbos. Can that be the point of the argument? Asks the Gemara Raminu. Chevel dli shenifsak. If the rope that was there, that was holding this pail over the pit, became torn and broke, got severed, lo yehei koishroi elo oinvoi. The Tanakhama say that you're not allowed to tie the two ends of the torn rope together in order to now be able to use the rope to lower and to raise the pail, but you can take the two ends and just make a bow in it. Exactly what's a kesher, what's a naniva, is not so clear, but either way, the Tanakhama say that you're not allowed to make a kesher, but you are allowed to make a bow. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, Rabbi Yehuda says, you're not even allowed to make a bow. Kirech olov punda oiposke, you're allowed to tie around the two ends of the torn rope. You can tie either a punda, a belt, or a poske, or a girdle. Ubilvad sheloye anvenu, you're not allowed to make a bow tying the two ends of the torn rope together, but you are allowed to take the two ends and tie them together using a belt or a girdle. So you see here that it's Rabbi Yehuda that says that even though an aniva we at this point are assuming is not called a kesher, nonetheless Rabbi Yehuda says don't make the bow because we're afraid you might make a knot. And the Tanakhama say you're allowed to make a bow. So why is it that in our Mishnah, according to our initial understanding, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda does not take the extra precaution the Tanakhama does, and in this Braisa we just learnt now, it's the Tanakhama that do not make the precaution, and Rabbi Yehuda does make the precaution. Kashya de Rabbi Yehuda ad Rabbi Yehuda. It seems to be a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda. Kashya de Rabbonon ad Rabbonon. It seems to be a contradiction in the Chachomim. Says the Gemara, no. De Rabbonon ad Rabbonon loy kashya. It's not a contradiction within the Rabbonon. Even though in our Mishnah it says you're not allowed to use even a weaver's rope. And in the Braisa we just saw now, the Chachomim do allow you to make a bow. Says the Gemara, chevel b'chevel michlaf. One rope and another rope, you may get confused between them. You might think, since I can use a rope of a weaver, I can use a regular rope as well. And therefore the Chachomim said, don't use any rope. However, in the case of the Braisa, we're talking about making a bow, not making a knot. And therefore, there's no reason that a person would get confused between a bow and a knot, and therefore he's allowed to make the bow, even though he would not be allowed to make the knot. And neither bikshira loy michla, for people would not get confused between the two. The Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda loy kashya. The seeming contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda, then our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda allowed them to use the weaver's rope. However, in the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda says, do not make an aniva. Also loy kashya, we can answer that. Hosom, loy mishum de mechlefa aniva bikshira. The reason in the Braisa you're not allowed to make a bow is not because of added precaution. As we saw in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't necessitate that added precaution, and that's why his matir, he allows them to use the weaver's rope. However, in the Braisa, the Rabbi Yehuda says, don't make an aniva, it's not so that you shouldn't get confused with a knot. No, elo aniva gufa kshirahi. Rabbi Yehuda maintains that this aniva, this bow, is in itself a knot. The Chachomim say it's not called a knot, and therefore you're allowed to do it. Rabbi Yehuda says that it's considered a knot, and therefore it's also on Shabbos. It's also on its own right. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rab Abba, Omer Rav Chiya bar Ashi, Omer Rav. It was said in the name of Rav. Mevi Odom Chevel mitoich beisa. A person is allowed to bring a rope from his home. V'koyishrei b'poro u'be'evos. He wants to make sure his cow is attached to the trough, to the receptacle from where the animal eats its food or drinks its water. So you're allowed to bring a rope and tie one end to the cow and the other end to the trough, and there's no problem of kosher, because we assume that it's not the knots are not going to stay there for any length of time, and therefore it's not a kesher shel kayom, and it's mutar on Shabbos. Asks the Gemara, Eisvei Rav Acha Aricha, the tall Rav Acha, the Hur of Achabar Papa, who was the Rav Achabar Papa, he asked L'Rav Abba, asked the following question against Rav. Chevel Shebeevus Koishrei Beporo. If the rope was attached to the trough, you're allowed to attach the other end to the cow, because we'll assume that afterwards you're going to detach it from the cow. It's a Keshe She'enik Shel Kayoma. V'Shebeporo Koishrei Beevus. If the rope was already attached to the cow, you can attach it to the trough. And again, because we assume that you're going to untie the knot that you're now making on Shabbos from the trough, you're going to untie it to release the cow. Ubelvad shelo yovi chevel mitoich beisoi v'yikshir b'poro u'be'evois. But this Braisa maintains, Rav Acha Richa, he held that. Or in this Braisa that Rav Acha brought, it says explicitly you're not allowed to bring a rope from your home and tie the cow and the trough. And this is directly opposing what Rav said, that mevi odom chevel mitoich beisoi, you are allowed to bring a rope from the home and on Shabbos tie both ends, one end to the cow and the other end to the trough. The difference between tying just one end, the loose end, or tying both ends, is when you tie both ends, there's always the risk that when you untie it, you're only going to tie one end and you're going to leave the other end tied for some length of time, and that's also on Shabbos. However, if the rope was already tied to the cow and you're just tying it to the trough, then the chances are you're going to untie the knot you're making on Shabbos, you're going to untie the end that you've now tied to the trough, therefore it's mutter. But in this Braisa it says that we are concerned if you're going to make both knots on Shabbos, that at least one of them is going to become a Kesher Shel Kayoma, not like Rav, who says that we're not worried about that. Says the Gemara, no. Hosom Chevel de Alma, Hocha Chevel de Gardi. It again depends what type of rope you're using. If you're using a regular rope, then that concern does exist that if you're going to tie the rope to the cow and to the trough, that one of them is going to remain there for some time, and it will be a kesher shel kayoma. However, if you're using a weaver's rope, chevel de garadi, in that case, there's no chance that you're going to leave either side attached for any length of time, because you need this rope, and therefore it's mutter on Shabbos. Continues the Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. It was said in the name of Shmuel. Klei kivoy. And this is a type of a loom. It works very similar to the loom that we've already been discussing at length in previous dafim. The loom that we've been discussing till now was a flat contraption, and we discussed that there were the two rods, one at each end. On one side, there were... We'll say it like this. The warp threads, which are the vertical threads, went directly vertically from where the person is sitting at the width, one end of the width, going all the way. The threads were coming from the end, from the furthest side towards the person. And then there was the weft threads, which were woven through the warp threads. And then the person would roll up the thread on this bar that was closest to him, and that's how he would weave. And we've discussed the heddle eyes and the various parts of that loom. Now we're talking about a type of loom which is similar, however it's an upright contraption with two poles, one on each side, holding up this contraption. And instead of the threads going from furthest away, coming towards the person that's weaving, over here the thread started on top and went downwards towards the bar that was holding the threads at the bottom. And whilst in a vertical position, they would thread the weft threads through the warp threads. And here too, there's three different parts of this loom. There's the two poles on the side, the bars that are holding this whole contraption in. And then you've got the two rods, the very thick rods, one where the string is getting unraveled from at the top, the other one where the material is getting rolled onto at the bottom. And then you've got the little frames, the thinner rods in between, which are doing the same job as the heddle eyes, the heddle frame that we discussed previously. The question now that the Gemara is going to discuss now is, what part of this loom are you actually allowed to dismantle or use on Shabbos? Is it muktzah? And the discussion is that this loom is used primarily for weaving. To weave, it's also on Shabbos. So if any of the parts of this loom are exclusively to be used just for the loom, then it's muktzah, because it's been dedicated for something which is also on Shabbos. However, since this loom was one that was dismantled, it's very possible that some of the parts of this loom could have been used for other things as well, for things that are mutar on Shabbos, and then it's not going to be muktzah. So says the Gemara, klei kivoy, this loom that we just described, mutar letaltalon b'Shabbos. The Gemara doesn't yet tell us which part of it we're talking about, but this klei kivoy is mutar. There's definitely some part of it which is not exclusively used for the loom. Boy, my name is Rav Yehuda. They asked Rav Yehuda as follows, koivei to elyoin, the upper beam, which is where the loose threads are rolled up on, the kovet hatachtoin, and the lower beam, which is where the material is getting rolled onto, mahu, are those also otherwise used for things that are muta on Shabbos? Or do we say no, just the very thin pieces of the thin rods, which take the place of the heddle frame, those are also used for other things, and therefore you're allowed to move them on Shabbos. But these beams, these heavy beams, the Kovet Elyon, Kovet Tachton, which are much heavier, it could be that people wouldn't use it. They're too heavy to be used for anything besides what they've been made for. So Rav Yehuda answered, in Veloy, he said, yes, no, Verafia Biyodi. He was not so confident about the Psak, he wasn't sure whether it's Mutter or whether it's Osa. Says the Gemara, Itmar, Omer of Nachman Omer Shmuel. It was said in the name of Shmuel, Klei kivoi mutter letaltalon b'Shabbos. This loom that we discussed now is mutter to move it on Shabbos. Afilu kovid ha'elyon v'kovid ha'tachtoin. Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel, in a definite way, that even the beams, the upper beam and the lower beams, are also allowed to be moved on Shabbos. Avoloy yaseh amudim. But the two posts that are holding the contraption down onto the ground and into the ground, those are not allowed to be moved on Shabbos. Omale Rava Rav Nachman. Rava asked Rav Nachman, Maishno amudim deloy. Why should these posts be more mukta than the beams, the top and the up and the lower beams? Ile medeka ovid gumois, are you concerned that since these two posts are actually dug into the ground, and taking them out on Shabbos is going to make a hole in the ground? Gumois memeila kohavion. I'm not digging the holes. The holes are there. The holes are there by virtue of the fact that the posts are in those holes. I'm just taking out the posts from the existing holes. That's not a problem with making a hole on Shabbos. Ditnan. We learnt in a Mishnah. If somebody buries turnips or radishes tachas hagefen underneath a grapevine, im miktsas alov megulin, if a certain amount of a little bit of the leaves of these turnips or radishes are actually megulim, if they are exposed above the ground, that means I don't need to dig into the ground, and this is obviously for Shabbos we need this, ein echoshesh. Then we don't need to be concerned, and you're allowed to pull out these radishes or turnips on Shabbos. Why are we not concerned that he's making a hole? The answer is because the hole is there already. I'm allowed to take them out. And it says, Eina choshesh lo mishum kilayim. We know that some things are not allowed to be grown in a grapevine. It's kilayim. This is not considered, it's not considered growing in the ground. It's just considered placed in the ground. It's just buried in the ground, but we're not afraid that it's there for enough time, or was put there in order that it should actually get rooted and planted into the ground. Therefore, there's no issue with kilayim. V'loim mishum shvius, we know on Shemitah you're not allowed to plant anything, but you're allowed to hide these vegetables into the ground because you're not planting them. You're just saving them there. You're just burying them there temporarily till you need them. V'loim mishum meiser, there's no issue of needing to retake meiser, as if once it's been replanted and then you take it out again, you have to take Meiser again. But this is not considered replanted. Nitlin b'Shabbos, and you're allowed to pull them out on Shabbos, and we're not concerned that you're going to make a hole. If so, the posts, that the amudim that are holding this kivoi, this contraption, this loom, it should be mutter to use on Shabbos. There should be no issue from the fact that you're making a hole or you're revealing a hole when you take them out of the ground. Says the Gemara, I'll tell you the difference. Besode, the Mishnah you mentioned with the radishes and the turnips, there was a field. In the field, you'll pull them out, the hole will stay there, and that doesn't bother anyone. Lo'osi le'ashvei gumois, you're not going to come to smoothen out the holes and fill them up, which is also on Shabbos. Hocha, but over here, regarding our loom, bebayis, we assume this loom is in a home. In a home, osi le'ashvei gumois, it's typical that you want the floor to be level. So you're going to pull out these posts, that's okay. But now you're left with a hole. You're left with a hole. You might come to fill the hole. That's also on Shabbos. It's also of Boina. We've seen it in Shabbos already, early on in the Masechta. Continues the Gemara. Boya minei Rav Yochanan mi Rav Yehuda bar Livoy. Rav Yochanan asked Rav Yehuda bar Livoy the following question. Kli kivoy, this loom that we just discussed, kagoin kovid ha'elyon v'kovid ha'tachtoin, the upper beam and the lower beam, ma'u l'taltalon b'Shabbos, is it mutter to carry it, to move them on Shabbos? Is it not? Omer le, so Rabbi Yehuda bar Livoy said, answer to Rabbi Yochanan, ein metaltalin, you're not allowed to move them. Contrary to what we saw before in the name of Shmuel, that you're allowed to move them, here in the name of Rabbi Yehuda bar Livoy said, you're not allowed to move them. Matam, why? Levisha ein nitlin, because they are so heavy that even during the week you would never move them to use it for something else. And therefore these two parts of the loom which are too heavy to be used, and therefore it's mukta machmas isser, it's dedicated exclusively to do something which is also on Shabbos, namely to weave, and therefore it's mukta, and you're not allowed to use this whole contraption on Shabbos. Continues, that says the next Mishnah. Mekaplin esakelim afilu arbo v'chamisha pomim. A person is allowed to fold his garments on Shabbos even 4 or 5 times. He takes off a garment, he's allowed to fold it up, and till the next time he needs it, then he takes it and unfolds it and wears it, and when he's finished, he again folds it. As long as he's folding it in order to keep it nice and smooth, without wrinkles, to be used again on Shabbos, it's mutter. Another halacha, umatzien es hamitos meleil Shabbos leShabbos. You're allowed to make the beds on Friday night in order to use them later on Shabbos day. Aval lo meShabbos leMoitzei Shabbos, you're not allowed to do any effort in to prepare from Shabbos to Motzei Shabbos, and therefore you're not allowed to make the beds on Shabbos in order that after Shabbos the beds should be made, nor are you allowed to fold garments on Shabbos in order that after Shabbos you should be able to wear them without creases. Rabbi Shmuel says, Mekaplin es hakelim umatzien es hamitos miyoyim hakipurim leShabbos. Rabbi Shmuel maintains that the Kedusha of Shabbos is more than the Kedusha of Yom Kippur, and therefore you're allowed to prepare from Yom Kippur to Shabbos. Back in the days, before they used the fixed calendar we have now, Yom Kippur could have fallen on a Friday or on a Sunday. So in the case that Yom Kippur is on a Friday, you're allowed to do Hachonah from Yom Kippur for Shabbos. V'chelvei Shabbos kreivin b'yom Kippurim. And for a similar reason, the fats of the korbonis that were shechted on Shabbos, and they didn't have time to put them on the Mizbeach on Shabbos, they would put them on the Mizbeach on Motzei Shabbos, even if Yom Kippur is Motzei Shabbos. Again, for the same reason, since Yom Kippur is less Kodosh than Shabbos, it's okay to take korbonis of the more Kodosh, the more severe day, which is Shabbos, and offer them on the Mizbeach on the less severe day of Yom Kippur. If Yom Kippur is on Erev Shabbos, you're not allowed to take the korbonis of Yom Kippur and put them onto the Mizbeach on Friday night, which is Motzei Yom Kippur, because you're not allowed to burn or offer up on Shabbos korbonis that belong to a day that has less Kedusha the day before, namely Yom Kippur. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, who holds that Yom Kippur is less severe than Shabbos. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says that Shabbos and Yom Kippur have the same level. We consider it as the same level of Kedusha, the same level of severity, and therefore, lo yishal Shabbos kreivim b'yom HaKippurim, v'lo yishal yom HaKippurim kreivim b'Shabbos. You're not allowed to put the fats of Shabbos onto the Mizbeach on Motzei Shabbos if it's Yom Kippur, nor are you allowed to put the fats of the Yom Kippur korbanos onto the Mizbeach on Motzei Yom Kippur if it's Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Omri debei Rav Yanai, lo yishonu elo ba'odom echod. This that we saw in the Mishnah, that you're allowed to fold up your garments, your clothes, on Shabbos, is only a person folding up a garment on his own. Aval b'shnei b'nei odom, but two people together who are folding up a garment, and typically they would stretch out the clothes and smooth it, and therefore it looks much more like you're fixing the garment, and therefore with two people it's going to be osa. Uba'odom echod nami, and even if just one person is doing it, and the Mishnah says you're allowed to fold garments on Shabbos, lo omron elo b'chadoshim, it's only with new clothes that are still relatively stiff, and therefore they do not get creased or wrinkled so quickly, and therefore folding them is not really considered or doesn't look like you're fixing it. Aval b'yishonim, but with old clothes that get very easily wrinkled and creased, loy, you're not allowed to fold them on Shabbos. Ubechadoshim nami, and even with new ones that we said you are allowed to fold on Shabbos, loy omron elo b'levonim, only with white ones, where there's no color involved. However, aval b'tzvuin, but those that are colored, that are dyed, loy, because folding them, it fixes, it secures and strengthens the color in the material, and therefore that in itself is similar to mesakin, to fixing, and is osa on Shabbos. V'loy omron, and even what you are allowed to do, if it's white, new garments that you're folding on your own, it's only muta elo she'en loy lehachlif. If you haven't got other clothes to wear on Shabbos and you want to wear these clothes, you're allowed to fold them on Shabbos. Aval yesh lo lehachlif, but if he's got other clothes that he could wear instead of this, loy, in that case, he should not fold the clothes on Shabbos. Tana de bei Rabbi Tana shel beis Rabbi Gamliel lehoyu mekaplim klei lavon. They taught that in the home of Rabbi Gamliel they would not fold even the white clothes, and it goes without saying that they would not fold the colored clothes. Mipnei shehoyo lein lachlif, in Rabbi Gamliel's home they had clothes to switch into, and therefore they did not need to fold the clothes that had been previously worn. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rav Huna, im yesh lo lehachlif yachlif. And this is not really a continuation of the previous Gemara. Istama halacha. If a person is wearing weekday clothes on Erev Shabbos, then if he has clothes, let's call them Shabbos clothes, to change into, im yesh lo lehachlif yachlif. He should change into Shabbos clothes. We'll soon see what the source of this is. But there's a virtue of wearing Shabbos clothes on Shabbos. Vim ein lo lehachlif. If he's not fortunate enough to have a set of Shabbos clothes, yeshalshil bebegodov, then he should let down his clothes. And it was typical in the olden days where the rich people who were at home, they were not working in the fields, then they would typically wear longer garments because the garments would not get ruined even though they were long. The work people who were working in the fields, if they would have worn long garments, then the garments would have got ruined and dirtied in the fields. So it was typical that the rich people wore long garments, but the working people, they would wear shorter garments. On Shabbos, no one's working, and then in order as a sign for the respect and the honor of Shabbos, then you should take the short clothes that you have, the robes or whatever they were wearing, and let them down a little bit, so it should look a little bit more regal, a little bit more royal. Ask the Gemara Maskif, Lor of Papa. If Papa asked, "Vahomerze karamus rucha," if this person is suddenly going to walk around in royalty, it looks like he's being haughty. Says the Gemara, "No. Kiven de kol yoyim loyka ovid, since every other day his clothes are short. Vahidna, and just on Shabbos, because of Shabbos, hudaka ovid, he's lowering his clothes in honor for Shabbos. Loyim eschazik karamus rucha. It does not look like haughtiness. It looks like respect for Shabbos." Continues the Gemara. And the Gemara is going to explain a pasuk in Yeshaya, a quite well-known pasuk. The pasuk says, "Im toshiv mishabos raglecho, asois chafotzecho b'yom kodshi, v'karoso l'shabbos oineg, l'kdoish Hashem chubo." These are all preparations for Shabbos. "V'chibadotoy," and you should honor Shabbos, "mi'asois torachecho," from going, from doing your ways, "mimtzei cheftzecho," from engaging in your wants, in your needs, "V'daber dover," and speaking words. And the Gemara is going to explain what does "v'chibadetoy" mean, what does "me'asay istorachecho" mean, what does "mimtzei cheftzecho" mean, and what does "v'daber dover" mean. Says the Gemara, "V'chibadetoy," you should honor Shabbos, "me'asay istorachecho," from doing your ways. "V'chibadetoy," the word "v'chibadetoy," before we even continue, how do you honor Shabbos? "Shelo yehei malbushcho shel Shabbos k'malbushcho shel chol." The clothes you wear on Shabbos, they should not be the same clothes as you wear during the week. And that is v'chibadetoy. That's how you honor Shabbos. "V'chihad Rabbi Yechanan," and this conforms with what we know from Rabbi Yechanan, "kori lemone," he would call clothes "mechabdusei," those that honor me. So you see that a person gets honored with the clothes he's wearing and through the clothes he's wearing. So on Shabbos, when you have to honor the Shabbos, honor Shabbos with Shabbos clothes. "Me'asois terachecho," when you have to honor Shabbos, "me'asois terachecho," from doing your ways. Says the Gemara, what does that mean? "Shelo yehei hiluchoch shel Shabbos," that your walking on Shabbos should not be kihiluchoch shel chol, should not be like you walk during the weekdays. And we'll see soon what that means. "Mimtzoi cheftzecho," that on Shabbos you should refrain from seeking your wants. What does that mean? "Chafotzecho asurim," your own private wants and desires, those are osa. And Rashi brings from a Gemara in Erevin, you shouldn't go and walk in your fields and engage in in checking out what your field needs after Shabbos, what you're going to have to do to improve your field. Those are your own wants. On Shabbos, you should not be engaged in your own wants. However, Cheftei Shemaim, the wants of Hashem, of spirituality, for example, Rashi says, to make commitments to give tzedakah, or to deal with shiduchim, etc. Those are Cheftei Shemaim, mutarim, and they are mutar on Shabbos. V'daber dover, and speaking words. You should honor Shabbos with words that you do or don't speak. What does that mean? Shelo yehei diburcho shel Shabbos ki diburcho shel choil. Your words on Shabbos should not be the same as your words of during the week. And Rashi explains, what does that mean? It means that the words of mekach or memkar, of business transactions and calculations and accounts, those things you shouldn't be doing on Shabbos. Those are words of weekdays. Tosfos says that should really be included in mimtzei cheftzecha, that engaging in your own wants. So Tosfos says that daber davar means that you should just refrain from speaking too much. The Tosfos brings some Yerushalmi that the Chachomim were even contemplating prohibiting just saying shalom one to each other, saying hi, because on Shabbos we're supposed to be engaged in introspection, and you know we're not supposed to be busy talking so much. So that's what it means. Shelo yehi dibur choshel Shabbos ki dibur choshel chol. Dibur osur. Here or muta, however, whatever you're not allowed to say, you are allowed to think about. Says the Gemara, Bishlei Mekulhu, all the things we just mentioned explaining this pasuk, lechaye, we can understand it, all is well with it. Elo shelo yehi luchoch shel Shabbos ki luchoch shel chol mahi. The only thing I didn't understand was, what does it mean that your walking on Shabbos should be different to your walking on during the week? How do you walk during the week, and how do you walk on Shabbos? And the Gemara is going to have two explanations for this. Says the Gemara, ki ha do omer of huna marav. In the name of Rav, it was said as follows. V'omri le omer of Abba omer of huna. Some say it in the name of Rav Huna. Hoyo mahalich b'Shabbos, if somebody was walking on Shabbos. Upoga, and he encountered ba'amas hamayim, a stream of water. Im yochi lehaniach es ragloi rishoyno, koidim sheteokir shnia. If the stream is narrow enough that you can put your foot, the first foot you're lifting, over and down onto the ground on the other side of the stream before you lift up the second foot, which means you don't need to jump over it, you can actually just walk over it, then mutter, then you're allowed to walk over it, and not only are you allowed to walk over it, if it's so narrow, you're also allowed to jump over it. V'imlav, however, if it's too wide and you can only jump, you cannot walk over it, also you're not allowed to jump over it. Asks the Gemara. So this quote that we just saw now, this halacha, that you're not allowed to jump over a stream if it's a stream which is so far that you cannot walk over, you're not allowed to jump over it, that's something that during the week you can do. On Shabbos you shouldn't do. And that's what it means. Shelo yehei hiluchach b'Shabbos, like hiluchach shel chol. Asks the Gemara. Maskif lo rova. Hey Chalavid, somebody who's walking on Shabbos and he encounters this stream, what should he do? What do you expect him to do? Leikuf, do you want him to go all the way round and follow the stream on one side of the stream till it gets either very narrow or till the end of the stream? Komapish bihilucha, you're causing him to extend the amount that he has to walk, and that's also not advisable on Shabbos. You shouldn't be going for doing extra tircha, extra work on Shabbos. Liavir, you want him to walk through the stream, and that's better than jumping over the stream. There's a problem with that. Zimnin, sometimes de misvason moni, his clothes are going to get soaked maya with water, and then you're going to possibly end up squeezing the clothes, and that's an issa of seichet. You're not allowed to squeeze wet clothes on Shabbos. Vosile de schita, he's going to come and squeeze, wring out the clothes, squeeze the clothes. Elo, says the Gemara, Baha, Kivin Deloy Efshar, Shapir Domi. No, indeed, that if the stream is too narrow, you cannot jump over, and there's no other way of doing it in a more preferable way, you are allowed to jump over such a stream, which means that At the end of the day, what it means is you're allowed to jump over such a stream, even though you could not walk over it. In which case, the question comes back, what type of walking is done during the week and should not be done on Shabbos? It's like the question that Rebbe asked from Rebbe Shmuel Rebbe Yossi. Mahu lifsoya psiogasa. What's the halacha? Are you allowed to take large strides on Shabbos? And Rashi says a large stride is an amo, 6 tfachim. Are you allowed to take a large stride on Shabbos? Omale. So Bishmol Rebbe Yossi answered back to Rebbe, v'chi b'chol mihutra. During the week, you are allowed to walk with long strides. Shani oimer psiogaso noiteles echod michamesh meois meoir einov shel odom. Walking with large strides actually reduces a 500th of a person's eyesight, and therefore you should not do it even during the week. Umahadur le bekidusha de beishimsha, and that eyesight that he lost during the week does get restored on Shabbos, on Kiddush that you make on Friday night. And Rashi says it means drinking the Kiddush wine on Friday night restores the eyesight. So either way, what do we see from here? That psio gaso, if it's done during the week, even though it's not advisable, but if you drink the Kiddush on Friday night, then the side effects will be repaired. However, on Shabbos, you're not allowed to walk psio gaso, and if you walk psio gaso, then the chances are that even drinking the wine on Friday night will not help you. And this is what it means, shelo yehei hiluchoch shel Shabbos, ki luchoch shel chayil. On Shabbos, one should refrain from walking at all expense, at all cost. One should not walk with these long strides. Continues the Gemara. Boy minei Rebbe mir b'shmol b'Rebbe Yossi. Mahu le'echol adomo b'Shabbos. Is one allowed to eat earth? There were certain types of earth that they knew that had some therapeutic or some cure in it. There was some medical value in it. And the question is, are you allowed to eat such earth on Shabbos? Or do we say no? It goes in the same bracket as all the things that one does for the sake of healing and is also on Shabbos. Omer le, Rebbe Shmuel b'Rebbe Yossi answered to Rebbe, v'chi b'chol mihutra, during the week, is it muta? Is it advisable? Is it allowed to eat earth even during the week, even as a cure? We know that eating earth actually causes more ailment, it's dangerous. Shani oimer af b'chol asur, even during the week it's awesome. Mipnei shehu malke. It can cause an injury. And we'll soon see what type of injury that eating earth can cause. And therefore, it's a no discussion regarding Shabbos because it's also across the board. Omer of Ami. Kol ha'oichel me'afro shel bovel. Anyone that eats from the dust of bovel, Babylonian. Ki'ilu oichel mi'basar avoisov. It's as if he's eating the flesh of his ancestors. The chances are that one of his ancestors were there in the time of the Churban Beis Hamikdash. And unlike Eretz Yisrael, in Bovel, they were not always so careful to bury people in clearly marked and designated areas in burial grounds. And therefore, the chances are that the dust are actually the remnants, the leftovers of flesh of our ancestors that were there at the time. V'yesh oimrim, others say that eating the dust of Bovel is kilu oichel shkotzim urumosim. It's as if he's eating insects and animals. Why? Dichsiv, it says in the Pasuk by the Mabul. We know in the time of Noach there was a Mabul, and the whole of creation got destroyed. V'yimach eskola yikum, the entire existence got entirely blotted out. Where did existence go? There were many animals at the time. They all died. Where did they go? Omer Shlokish. Reshlokish says, Lama nikra shmo shinor. Why is another name for Bovel shinor? Says Reshlokish, Shekol meisei mabul, because all the deceased of the flood, ninaru, they were dumped, lesham in Bovel, and therefore the dust of Bovel is the remnant of those, of everything that got killed in the mabul. Omer Rebbeichnon. Rebbeichnon says, Lama nikra shmo metzula. Why is Bovel also called metzula, which means the deep? Shekol meisei mabul, all the dead of the mabul, nitzdalelu l'sham, they sank all the way down to Bovel, which is very low, and therefore again the dust of Bovel is the remnants of those that died in the Mabul. The Gemara is asking, you said a moment ago, Yesh Oimrim, some say that eating from the dust of Bovel is like eating Shkot Tzimur Mosim because of the remnants of those that got killed in the Mabul. In the boiling water of the Mabul and the journey that anything live had to make when the Mabul came, then it was clear that they became totally dissolved. There was nothing left. It's not as if the people or the animals of the time of the Mabul landed in Bovel, landed on the ground, and now there's a chance that the dust there are those remnants. They were obviously dissolved before they got to Bovel. Why should that impact the status of the dust of Bovel? Omri says the Gemara, Kiven de Malki Gozru Bei Rabbonon. You're right. The truth is that eating the dust of Bovel is not really like eating Shkot Tzimur Mosim, and the remnants of the Mabul are not an issue. Why did the Chachomim tell people that it's similar to Shkot Tzimur Mosim, and people understood that, possibly mistakenly, but that's what the Chachomim wanted them to get the impression, that it's as if they're eating Shkot Tzimur Mosim? Because the Chachomim knew that eating earth, and the question is why only in Bovel, but that's an issue the Mefarshim speak about. But the Chachomim knew it was dangerous to eat the earth of Bovel, and they say that in Bovel the earth has particular healing powers, and therefore people are prone to eat the dust of the earth of Bovel. The Chachomim wanted to avoid that in order people shouldn't get sick. They said eating the dust of Bovel is like eating Shkot Tzimur Mosim. What's the dangers of eating earth? Says the Gemara, Dohahu Gavra, there was this person, Dohochal Gargishto, he ate some clay, which is earth. Vohochal Tochli, and after that he ate something, some vegetable or something that grows called Tochli. Vekodchu Le Tochli, and this Tochli sprouted Belibe, started in his stomach. The Tochli that he ate actually got entrenched in the earth that he'd eaten before that, and it took to seed, and then it started growing, and it grew all the way to his heart. And when this Tochli penetrated his heart, Umeis, and he died. So you see from here that eating earth can be very dangerous, because if you eat something afterwards, it can actually, whatever you're eating, is going to get sown inside the intestine, inside the stomach, and that can be very dangerous. Says the Gemara. And now the Gemara is going to explain a number of psukim from Megillas Rus. The pasuk says as follows, that Naomi told Rus that in preparation for meeting Boaz, Verochatzt, you should bathe, Vosacht, and you should anoint, Vesamt Simloi Saich Olaich, and you should put your clothes, you should don your garments, you should wear your clothes. And obviously the question is, well, was she naked? Of course she has to wear clothes. Says the Gemara, Omer Belozo, Elu Begodim Shel Shabbos. If Naomi had to tell Rus to wear garments, it obviously wasn't telling her she should go dressed. It was obviously telling her that for the occasion, she should honor the occasion and she should wear her Shabbos clothes. Continues the Gemara, there's a pasuk in Mishli that says, Tein lechochom veyechkam oid. Give to a wise person and then he will become even wiser. Which means, and we're going to bring two examples of people that were given, they were wise people that were given advice, and because they were themselves wise, they became even wiser, and they didn't implement the instructions exactly the way it was said to them, they did something even wiser. Omer Belozo, Zurus Hamui Avio, Vishmuel Haramosi. Rus was one of those, and the other one was Shmuel. Rus, what happened with Rus? Where do we see that an instruction was given to Rus as ten lechochom, giving to a wise person, v'yechkam oid, and she was even wiser? Te'ilu Naomi korolo, when Naomi gave her instructions, Naomi said, v'rochatzt, and you should wash, you should bathe, v'sacht, and you should anoint, v'samtzim lo'isayich olayich, and you should wear these clothes, the Shabbos clothes, v'yiredes hagoyron, and you should go down to the threshing floor, which is where Boaz will be waiting for her. That's what the instructions that Naomi gave Rus. first prepare yourself and then go to the threshing floor. What did she do? Ve'ilu b'didoksiv, when she actually carried out the instructions, the Pasuk says it a bit differently. It first says, v'tayret ha'goyron, she went down to the threshing floor. V'hodar, and then it says, in the Pasuk, v'ta'as k'choyla she'tzivato chamoiso, and she adorned herself and did everything that her mother-in-law, Naomi, told her to do. And the reason that she didn't want to go down to the threshing floor, all adorned and wearing her Shabbos clothes, was because people who would see her going down, all made up like that, would suspect that she's up to no good business. And therefore, she decided it was more appropriate for Tznius that she should just go down regularly and only after that prepare herself. That's as far as Rus is concerned. Shmuel, where do we see with Shmuel that he didn't follow the instructions exactly and he was actually v'yechkam oid? De'ilu Eli, see what happened was Shmuel used to hear a voice in the night calling his name, Shmuel, Shmuel, and he didn't know who it was. Eli tried to impress on Shmuel and say, it's Hashem calling you and you should respond in kind. De'ilu Eli k'omerle, Eli HaKohen told Shmuel, said to him, Shchov, you should go and lie down as you used to. V'hoyoim yikro elecho, and if the voice calls out to you, v'omarto, and you should respond, Dabir Hashem, speak Hashem, ki shemea avdecho, because your servant, Mishmuel, I'm listening. V'ilu b'dideiksev, what happened in practice? What did he do? The Pasuk says, v'yovo Hashem, v'yisyatsev, Hashem came and he spoke, he was there, Vayikro kapam bapam, and he called as he had done till now, Shmuel, Shmuel, he was calling Shmuel. Vayoyme Shmuel, what did Shmuel say? How did you respond? Daber, speak, kishemea avdecho, your servant is listening to you. Veloy omar daber Hashem, Eli told him, say, speak Hashem. Shmuel did not want to address this voice as calling it Hashem, because Shmuel was not 100% certain it was Hashem. Maybe it was somebody else. Maybe it was something else. Therefore, he responded by saying, Dabir, speak. He didn't want to use Hashem's name in fear that possibly it wasn't Hashem. Continues the Gemara. And we're continuing now with some psukim in Rus. The Pasuk says, Vateilech, that Rus, she went down, Vatovoi, she came, Vatelakit Basod, and she was collecting the stalks from the field. Omer Belozo, what does it mean? Vatelech, Vatovoi, she came, she went, she came. Says Shaholcha Ubos, Holcha Ubos, she went, but she didn't stay there. She came back, and she went again, and she came back. She wasn't settled. Why? She wanted to make sure that the company she was with was decent company. She wanted to make sure the harvesters and the other people around that she was going with were appropriate. And she had to go backwards and forwards a few times until she found appropriate company. Continues the Gemara. There's another pasuk in Rus. Vayomer Boaz lenaroi. Boaz said to one of the servants there, Hanitzav al hakotzrim, to the one that was overseeing the harvesters, he asked this nar, this youngster, Lemi hanara azois, to who is this young girl? Asks the Gemara, V'chidarke shel Boaz, was that the practice of Boaz, lishoil benara, to inquire after some nara, after a young girl that was coming to the fields? That obviously meant that he noticed them and was looking at them. It's inappropriate for a person to look at girls. That's what Rashi says. Imkein mistakel bohen hoya. He was looking at them and he was clearly not doing that. I mean, obviously he saw them, but he wasn't gazing at them. And here he was inquiring after them. It seems that he took real notice of them. That's inappropriate. Omer Reb Elazar says no. Dvar choch merobo. He saw something very wise in the way that Rus was behaving, and therefore he inquired to see, who is this? There's something unique here, there's something special here. Shnei shibolin lokto. If Rus saw two is of produce lokto, then she would take it. Shloisha shibolim, but if there were only three, not two, if there were three, einei lokto. And She wouldn't take it if there were three. And from the fact that she knew the halachas exactly, that two are called leket, three is not called leket, she's not allowed to take it, he realized that this was a very learned person and she wanted to know her nature, her background, where she comes from. In a braisa we learned that the Dvar Chochma, the wise thing that Boaz saw about Rus, was Dvar Tznius Rabba. He saw a tremendous level of humility. And Oimdois, if the stalks, the ears that she was taking, were standing, they were still attached to the ground, and this is not leket, this is called shikha, mu'umud, then she would take them while she was in a standing position. Noiflois, however, when she was taking the leket that was lying on the ground, she wouldn't bend down, because that's not so tznius, it's not so humble, and it could expose parts of her that she didn't want to expose. Miyushev, she would crouch down in a sitting position, and she would take the ears of produce that way, and he saw this tremendous tznius, and therefore he inquired, who is this? Continues the Gemara. The Pasuk says in Rus, Vayomer Boaz el Rus, Boaz said to Rus, Haloi shomat biti, al tilchi lilkut b'steacher, don't besod acher, don't go and collect produce in different fields, gamloi tavuri mizeh, v'choy sidbokun imna roisai. Right? Boaz told Rus that she should cleave, she should cling, imna roisai, together with the youth, with the young ones of Boaz. And those naroisai, they were the maids, the girls. So Boaz told Rus, you stay around here and cling to the girls, to my girls here, to my maids. Asks the Gemara, v'chidarka shel Boaz ledavik im hanoshim. Is it appropriate? Was that his practice of Boaz, who was one of the gedolei hador, that he should be cleaving to girls? Omer Reb Elozer, kiven dechoza, since Boaz saw, he saw what happened in a different pasuk. The pasuk says that when Rus, together with Orpah, came back, and Naomi gave them both permission to leave. They were both married to sons of Naomi that had passed away. And she said, you can go back to the homes that you came from. They came from non-Jewish origins. Orpah left. Rus clung onto Naomi and said, I'm here to stay. At that point, it became clear to Boaz that the Geirus, her conversion, was completely valid and sincere. The pasuk says, "Vatishak Orpah lechamoisa." Orpah kissed her mother-in-law and left. Verus dovka bo, but Rus insisted on clinging on to Naomi and staying with her. Omar, so he said, "Shori leidbuki bo." From the fact that I see that her conversion is completely valid, it's now muta to marry her, and marriage is, the expression for marriage is dovuk, is clinging, is cleaving, and therefore he used the words v'choy sidbokin imna roisai, that you should cleave here together with the maids. What he really wants to, he was alluding to her to say, I'm aware that your conversion is completely valid and you are marriage material in Klal Yisrael. So of course Boaz did not cling to any of his maidens. He had those maids there. He didn't cling to them. He didn't cling to anyone here. Boaz was a big tzaddik. However, the question of the Gemara was, why are you using the term clinging, which is a term that's often used for quite a intimate and close relationship? It was inappropriate to use that term when addressing Rus. For that, the Gemara explains that he was actually alluding to a very sensitive point, that she was a type of person, a type of convert, that it was okay to consider getting into a marital relationship with her in an appropriate way. Continues the Gemara. The next another pasuk in Rus, Vayoymer lo Boaz le'eis ha'oichel. Boaz said to Rus at the time when they were eating, Geshi haloim, come haloim to this place, which is a very unusual term, haloim. Omer Rebelozo says, Remez Romazlo, and Rashi says this was Ruach HaKodesh. He got some revelation that he was supposed to be alluding, he may not even have been consciously aware of it, but he was alluding to the following fact, that Asido Malchus Beis David Lotzeis Mimech, that the kingdom of David HaMelech, who was a descendant of Rus, was actually going to come from Rus, And that's what he was alluding to by using the word Halloim. Tichsiv Bei Halloim. By David HaMelech and the family of David HaMelech and the descendants of David HaMelech, they were considered, they were related to with the term Halloim. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk, says, Vayovei HaMelech David Vayeshev Lifnei Hashem, after Noson HaNovi told David HaMelech that the Mashiach and the Malchus is going to come from David, then David said, sat in front of Hashem and said, Vayomer, he said, Mi Onoichi, who am I? Hashem, Umi Beisi, and who's my home? Like, why am I worthy? Ki havi oisani ad Halloim, that you have brought me till Halloim. Halloim meaning to be the Malchus in Klal Yisrael and to be the Mashiach in Klal Yisrael. So you see that Halloim is referring to the dynasty of David HaMelech. And Boaz was alluding that to Rus by saying that she should come Halloim to say that from you is going to come the whole dynasty of David HaMelech. Continues the Gemara, another Pasuk. The Pasuk says that Boaz told Rus, V'tovalt piteich b'chometz, and you should dip your bread, whatever you're eating, into vinegar. Omer Rebbe Loza says, Mikan she'chometz yofo l'sherev. From here you see that vinegar is beneficial when in very hot weather. Reb Shmuel bar Nachmeini Omer. Shmuel bar Nachmeini says again, there was a Ruach HaKodesh here, Remez Romaz Lo, he was alluding to the Osid Ben Lotzis Memcho, that there's going to be one descendant from you, Rus, Shemaisav Koshin Kachoymet, whose deeds are going to be sharp, bitter, like vinegar. Umanu, who was that? Menashe? Menashe was a descendant of Rus, and he was alluding to her that take some vinegar, be aware that there's going to be a Menashe coming from you. Continues the Gemara, it says in the Pasuk, Vateshev, he was telling her where to sit, or where he sat her, Vateshev mitzad hakoitzrim, that he sat her at the edge of the harvesters. Omer Belozo, mitzad hakoitzrim, mitzad, from the edge, on the outer edge, if Boaz was sitting at one side, and beyond him were all the harvesters, at the other edge, he put Rus. The Rus was not sitting either between the harvesters and Boaz or within, amidst the harvesters. She was right on the other edge, which means that the whole group of harvesters were actually separating between Boaz and Rus. Remez Romaz Lo, he was alluding to the fact that Asido Malchus Beis David Shetes Chalek. Well, it's apparent in Rus that Boaz actually married Rus, and from that marriage came the whole dynasty of David HaMelech, and he was alluding to the fact that the entire dynasty, the family of David HaMelech, that's coming from you and me, you Rus, and me Boaz, but there's also going to be a certain separation between the family that we're going to bring, the family of David HaMelech. And when was that? That was after Shlomo HaMelech passed away. Then Malchus Beis David got completely split between Yerovam ben Nevat and Rechavam, and there was a split. And Boaz was alluding that to Rus to know that even though the two of us are going to build the family of David, but there is going to be a split at some point. Continues the Pasuk, Vayitzbot lo, he handed her koli, parched grain, Vatoichal, and she ate, Vatizba, and she was satisfied, Vatoisar, and there was left over. Omer Rebbe Loza, Vatoichal, this is alluding to either physical or spiritual gains and benefits and riches that the Malchus Beis David were going to have. Vatoichal b'mei David, the eating, the having so much to eat, that was in the time of David HaMelech. Vatizba, and being satisfied, which is an added extension, an added virtue, that is not only David, but that's going to be in the time of b'mei Shlomo and Shlomo HaMelech's days. Vatoisar, and there's even going to be leftover riches, and those leftovers are going to be felt up to the times we may Chizkiah, in the times of Chizkiah HaMelech, who was also a descendant of David HaMelech. Ve'ikid Amra, others say, Vatoichal, the eating was alluding to b'mei David u'b'mei Shlomo. David and Shlomo, that was considered the eating of the Malchus. Vatizba, and the satisfaction b'mei Chizkiah. It lasted right to the days of Chizkiah. Vatoisar, and there was even leftovers that were stretched all the way beyond B'mei Rebbe to the times of Rebbe. Rebbe was a descendant of David HaMelech. Do Omar Mar, because how do we know that there were tremendous riches that were fitting for the Malchus based David extended to the times of Rebbe? Do Omar Mar, Ahuryori de Rebbe, the stablemen of Rebbe, and all they had was the manure, was the leftovers of the animals. And there was so much there that even selling this dung of the animals made this stableman so rich, richer than the Persian kings. That this Ahuryoria de Rebbe, the stableman of Rebbe, have a otter, he was richer mishvur than Shvur, who was Malko, who was the Persian king. B'masnitatonin, another brisa, it says, V'atoichal, this is only, now is we're learning the pasuk purely in the spiritual sense. V'atoichal bo'olam hazeh, the riches, the gains that she was going to reap in a spiritual level in this world. V'atizba, and be satisfied from what she's eaten in this world, she'll be satisfied from that, l'imois ha-mashiach, with the coming of Mashiach. V'atoisa, and is going to even be left over, l'osid lovoi, to the times of L'osid Lovei, which is going to be a stage in time way beyond the Yemos HaMashiach. Continues the Gemara. It says in the Pasuk, regarding the army of Sancheirav, the king of Ashur, that the Malach came and killed the entire army of Sancheirav in the middle of the night. So the Pasuk says there, it's a Pasuk in Yeshaya, Lochein Yishalach Ha'odoin Hashem Tzvokis B'mishmanov Rozoin V'tachas Kvoidoi. We're going to see in the Gemara what this means, but let's translate it. V'tachas, in place of Kvoidoi, of the bodies. The Pasuk says V'tachas Kvoidoi Yekad Yekoid Ki Yekoid Eish, that beneath the honor, tachas kvoide, beneath the honor, yikoid yikoid, was kindled a flame, kiyikoid eish, like a burning fire. That's the expression used. What actually happened? Now, it's clear that the army of Sancheirav, since they were killed in a very supernatural way, they got burnt, but it wasn't like a big bonfire and everything about them got burnt, their souls, their bodies, their clothes, everything was burnt. No. On the outside, you couldn't see what was burnt. It was only something inside that got burnt. It was tachas kvoidoi, beneath the honor, the kvoid, that this flame was kindled and it was a burning fire. What does this mean? We're going to have three opinions in the Gemara. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, tachas means under. Kvoidoi means his clothes. Not the first time we've seen that today. We're going to see in a moment. V'tachas kvoidoi, beneath his kovoid, beneath his clothes. V'loi kvoidoi mamash. What kvoidoi? His clothes. That didn't get burnt. What got burnt? What was underneath the clothes? Rabbi Yochanan, and what is that? The bodies. That means the bodies of the soldiers of the army of Sancheirav got burnt, but their clothes remained intact. And Rabbi Yochanan l'tamein. This is Rabbi Yochanan, his own opinion that we've seen. Rabbi Yochanan kori lemoni mechabduse. Rabbi Yochanan called clothes as the thing that's giving him honor, and therefore kvoidoi mamush are clothes according to Rabbi Yochanan. Tachas kvoidoi is what's beneath the clothes, and that's the body, and it was the bodies that got burnt, not the clothes. Rabbi Loza Omer. Rabbi Loza says v'tachas doesn't mean underneath; it means in place of. Kvoidoi doesn't mean clothes; it means the bodies. What's the honor of a person? Not his clothes. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it's the clothes. According to Rabbi Loza, it's their bodies. V'tachas kvoidei, which means tachas kvoidei mamish. In place of the bodies, there was fire, which means that the bodies got burnt. That means that he holds, Rabbi Loza holds the same as Rabbi Yochanan, that what actually happened was that the bodies got burnt and not the clothes. Just Rabbi Yochanan reads the words, v'tachas kvoidei means beneath the clothes. And Rabbi Loza says it means in place of the bodies. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, he learns partly like Rabbi Yochanan, partly like Rabbi Loza. He says, Omar, tachas means beneath, under, like Rabbi Yochanan. But he doesn't say that kvoide means clothes. He means kvoide is the body. He says beneath the body, because got burnt. That means the bodies did not get burnt. It was what was beneath, what was hiding in the body, under the body, that's what got burnt. What's that? That's the soul. So according to Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni, it wasn't the clothes that got burnt. It wasn't even their bodies that got burnt. It was just their souls. Kasrifas b'nei Aaron, like the two sons of Aaron, Akoyen, Nodav, and Aviu, where they got, when they did what they did, it's a complicated discussion, but when they did what they did, when they went into the Mishkan to do the Avodah in a way or time that was inappropriate, then they got burnt. What got part of them got burnt? Mala alon sreifas neshama v'guf kayim. In the same way as with Nodav and Aviu, their bodies stayed intact. It was just their souls that got burnt. Afkan, so to hear, regarding the army of Sancheiriv, sreifas neshama v'guf kayim. Only their souls got burnt. Their bodies stayed entirely intact. Emirat Hashem, in the next shir, we're going to continue from here.